Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Marking Out with Mike. I am your favorite commissioner, as always, Michael Flanagan, hosting another episode of this podcast for you guys. I want to thank everybody for listening. We just did a show on Saturday. It was our SmackDown recap, only the second episode that we've done so far here on this brand new podcast series, and it's been our most listened to episode yet. So hopefully that upward trend will continue. You know, I don't really care about chasing subscriptions and things like that because, quite frankly, I don't see those numbers because I podcast through Anchor, and Anchor takes care of everything for me. So people listen on the Anchor website directly, on Spotify, on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and all sorts of other places. So I don't really see subscriptions and things like that. But as long as you guys are listening and as long as you're enjoying what you're hearing, then that at the end of the day is what makes me happy. That's what we're here for. That's what we're creating the content. So I'm actually going to be putting out two episodes here today on Monday, October 5th. So this first episode will be reviewing last Saturday night's Victory Road. The Impact monthly special that was offered by them, downloaded Impact Plus, signed up. Good value for a wrestling fan, especially if you're non-biased and you're just trying to check out all content from all brands. You really can't beat the deal. WWE Network is, you know, $9.99. These guys are $7.99, so you can get the little double dip and definitely listen to both. So I enjoyed it. This is really my first foray into Impact. As a diehard, I tried to watch recently on Twitch, but it's been hard because of my schedule, and it's been hard to go back, and you can't pause it. And really, that's what I like about the Impact Plus app. It gives me the opportunity to go through, to kind of watch at my own time, to do things at my own pace. I can pause it, I can come back to it, I can leave it open in the background. And it's been really convenient, and it's been a good way to reintroduce myself to the Impact brand, because I've been following TNA pretty much from day one, but I've always kind of came and went with their content. Some of it had to do with storytelling back in the early 2000s, around like 2006, when they were just pushing every former WWE talent, and they were letting guys like Kevin Nash get over all the time for absolutely no reason. I really lost interest. But they finally seem like they've got guys like Ace Austin and even Eric Young, who's a homegrown talent for them. Yeah, he was in WWE for a bit, but they've got a lot of their own talent now that they're mixing in with talent like Tommy Dreamer and guys that are from elsewhere. And they seem like they're finally doing a better job. They're the third brand, you know? You look at it, you got WWE, King of the Mountain, regardless of how you feel about their product. Then you got AEW that for the last year or so has really changed and reinvigorated wrestling fans. And then you got Impact, and it's a solid number three. It's by no means last place. I would consider them above, you know, stuff like Ring of Honor, because they, although they do have pretty poor distribution because not everybody has access, they are more available to fans than Ring of Honor is, and their app is easy to use. And yeah, I'd put them third, then you got Ring of Honor, and then you kind of got the other guys. It's just hard because Ring of Honor has, you know, their app where you can watch once they're producing regularly. And then New Japan even has New Japan World, their website. They might also have an app as well. But it gets expensive, so you got to kind of pick and choose what you want to engage with. But I enjoyed the pay-per-view, and we are going to talk about that, of course. We're going to get into it. And then maybe you just take a little break, and you come back again to the podcast channel, wherever it is that you guys listen to us, and you tune in again. So we're going to do the Victory Road recap, and then the second episode that I'm going to be putting out a little bit later on today is going to be a recap for NXT 31, the TakeOver special that just aired, of course, this past weekend on Sunday, yesterday. So we're going to have all the coverage of that. That was a pretty good pay-per-view as well. But there's a lot of news and notes to get to. I didn't want to jam-pack two show reviews all into one episode. And I do like to separate them based on what brand they are. So that way, if somebody doesn't like, that way, if you're not a fan of Impact or one of the pro wrestling brands. You don't have to listen to it just to get the coverage. With all my episodes, I'm always going to try to start with a little conversation at the beginning, jump into the news and the notes, and then the show review. So even if you see it's a Victory Road review and you're not into Impact, you can still listen at the beginning and get the information. And then when we jump into the show review, you can tap out. And you can do that for whichever brand you feel for. And if you are a fan of, let's say, AEW or NXT or whatever it is that we are covering, then listen the whole episode all the way through. Hopefully it'll keep you guys interested and invigorated. But for now, we are going to jump into the news and notes because, as I said, there is a lot of stuff. And it kind of ranges all over the place from good news to bad news, some milestones, and all points in between. So buckle in and enjoy the ride. So former WWE producer Sarah Stock was arrested on Sunday morning in Evansville, Indiana. Stock was recently released, or had been released from custody, but she was charged with the following offenses, which included aggravated battery, resisting law enforcement, disorderly conduct, and public intoxication. She was apparently in a fight outside of a bar there in Evansville, Indiana. And she also worked for Impact as an in-ring talent in 2009 under the name Cerrita. But she joined WWE in 2015 as a trainer. She was a producer for them. She was furloughed at the beginning of the COVID pandemic earlier this year. And then she was outright released completely a little bit later in the year, again, due to COVID. So she's getting in trouble. People don't know how to handle this pandemic. I think that there's a lot of free time. And if you have any sort of money, whether it's coming from money you've saved up from your career choices, like hers probably did, or if it's coming from unemployment offices, I think people are bored. And yeah, some people are turning to alcohol, and you got to know your balance. You got to know your personal limits, especially when you are someone in a position like her. I mean, anybody, but especially when you're in a position where you do have a little notoriety to your name from her wrestling background. So hopefully it's just a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. Hopefully she'll bounce back and be able to get her legal stuff under control, and then eventually get her personal matters taken care of and get back to whatever it is that she wants to do next in her life. So, today in Impact history marks, not a big milestone, but something that I saw on Twitter that was kind of interesting to me. So on this day in 2006, Seth Rollins, who of course had not been in WWE yet and was still under the name Tyler Black, was involved in a squash tag team match against Homicide, and, he was teaming with Jeff Watson. So they got a little clip on Twitter if you want to see good old Seth Rollins before he was the Monday Night Messiah, and before all his WWE success, and before he was Becky Lynch's fiance. So a little cute clip on there. You can see him back in his old school days. Joey Ryan, if he wasn't already in enough trouble, is now being accused of basically stealing people's creative rights. So he's been uploading full-length wrestling matches, not just clips, but the entire matches to his YouTube page and then monetizing them in an attempt to make money. So he's being accused of uploading those without consent by a company called Prestige Wrestling. And you might be thinking to yourself, well, if he's in those matches, you know, it should be fine. He should be able to just do with it as he pleases because that's his likeness. And listen, here's the thing. Those videos, those matches, those are produced. The graphics and everything that goes into producing them is done by those companies. And it's not easy. It takes a bit of time. And it's their hard work. It's their creative rights. They paid him that evening to wrestle on their event, and he was paid. And so he had been compensated for his involvement, and whatever they want to do thereafter, after they've paid the talent and after they've recorded him and edited it and, you know, put it out there in any way they want, that's their intellectual property to profit on. And the thing is, right now, like, if you're not already aware, he was accused of sexual misconduct. He's essentially been completely blackballed from the wrestling community as a whole. Fans haven't really come to his defense. His fellow wrestlers haven't come to his defense. Like, the guy is guilty in the court of public opinion, and you can't defend him. You go back in time, all the way back to early 2000s, the last 15 to 18 years, and there were always rumors about him, and nobody ever really thought anything of it because his gimmick itself was sexual. And so people always thought, oh, well, these are just marks that don't know what they're talking about. These are guys that don't like him. These are wrestlers that are pissed off because he's more over than they are. And there was always just like some sort of like built-in nonsense where people always like kind of defended him, which is absolutely ludicrous. And I'm kind of glad. I've never been a Joey Ryan fan, and you should never wish badly on someone, but I'm glad he's out of the company, and I'm glad he's being outed, because this company, now that he has such a bad public persona, they don't want to be associated with that. You're going to watch a clip, you're going to see a guy like Joey Ryan in the ring, and then you're potentially going to see the graphic for Prestige Wrestling, and I don't blame them for not wanting their brand, their company, their image, their logo, all that stuff to be associated with a guy like that. So hopefully YouTube will make him take it down, and hopefully that can be all figured out, and hopefully he never returns to pro wrestling in any landscape. He's just going to have to learn to cut his losses and go get a job as a contractor or something, because he made his bed, he did what he did, and he's going to have to lie in it now and just be a regular old guy and figure out what he wants to do, because he's not a wrestler. He's not a celebrity anymore, and he's done. So this is also a little sad. Rather than trying to paraphrase it and do a bad job, I'm just going to read an excerpt that I had taken off of Twitter from the original poster, and it has to do with cyberbullying in the wrestling community and fans taking it too far and thinking that maybe these wrestlers are too big and mighty and powerful, and you know, they're just playing a character, so I should be able to play a character too. So this is the thing, guys. As a fan, you're allowed to say if you think a wrestler sucks, if you think a wrestler is awesome. You're allowed to cheer and boo whoever you want. When you go even to a show and you pay for a ticket, within reason, you are able to express yourself however you want. You can bring your signs, you can wear your shirts, you can express yourself. But there is a line, and it is up to us as fans, especially most of us as adult fans, to know where that line is, and to keep it on the right side, keep it on the legal side, and keep it on the moral side. So we all, of course, know about Hana Kimura out of Japan. Unfortunately, she took her life after cyberbullying. So this is kind of a little excerpt that I found that I wanted to read that I thought was relevant, and that wrestling fans needed to remember that, yes, the wrestlers are characters. You are not a character. You as an individual, as a fan, you are not a character, you are a fan. No one is paying you. If you want to be a wrestler someday, you can take the proper channels and try to get there, but you are not entitled in any way, shape, or capacity to think that you have the right to go online and cyberbully these humans, these people, especially when it's men that are attacking the women. It is absolutely uncalled for. And sometimes I really wish that these wrestlers did have the opportunity to punch some of these people in the mouth, because it is disgusting when you see guys online bullying and talking smack to women like Nyla Rose. Like, you are a man and you are attacking a woman. You are body shaming her. You are talking, you're bringing people do it to Nyla Rose all the time and talk about her sexuality and, you know, her gender reassignment. Like, that is not your place, guys. If it makes you uncomfortable, take those feelings and sit with them yourselves in private and learn how to compartmentalize that and learn how to deal with it and get through it. If you don't want to see that individual, then don't turn on the TV, don't play video games with those individuals' likenesses, don't buy their merchandise. That is where your rights as a fan lie. Going on Twitter and being a complete jackass is not your place. It is not your place. So here's the excerpt. And I quote, "It seems wrestling fans have learned nothing following the tragic death of Hana Kimura earlier this year. Bea Priestley, who was one of Kimura's best friends, is now getting bullied online. According to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, it was speculated that this may be because of Will Ospreay, her boyfriend. he deleted his own Twitter. Osprey had been caught up in the hashtag speaking out movement earlier this year for helping to blackball another wrestler that accused one of his friends of sexual assault. The comments led to Priestley having people wish death on her, telling her to kill herself, similar to what the Terrace House fans did to Kimura. So for those of you that don't know, Terrace House, I believe, was a Netflix reality show that Hana Kimura was a contestant on, or whatever you want to call it. She was one of the talents on there. And if I understand correctly, there was an incident in which one of Kimura's roommates had used the washer and dryer. And so Kimura had her wrestling gear in there, which that stuff's expensive because it's custom and everything like that. And she had told her, like, something along the lines of, hey, when it's done, can you put it in the dryer for me or let me know? Something like that. So I guess the roommate, like roommates do, went and took the gear out of the washer and just put it up and then washed all her own stuff. And because it didn't get dried and it didn't finish getting washed, the gear was ruined and she was out the money. And I guess she made a scene about it, which is normal. You know, anybody who's had roommates has been in a situation like this. And for some reason, fans went on Twitter and essentially attacked her for it and bullied her for it. And unfortunately, earlier this year, she made the tragic choice of ending her own life over it. And it's absolutely disgusting. It's completely disgusting. So going back into it, it continues. Many of the fans claimed to be fans of Kimura and said these things to Priestley. Stardom, which was the name of the, or is the name of the wrestling organization in Japan where Kimura wrestled, responded by sending out a tweet asking fans if there had been enough tragedies lately. So pretty sad stuff. Hopefully won't take another path. And like I said, Will Ospreay took down his Twitter. We saw the Young Bucks delete their Twitter earlier. And, you know, I myself personally, not related to wrestling or cyberbullying or anything, have often thought about deleting my social media accounts. Thankfully, I've never had any problems on Twitter, probably because I'm just so low down the totem pole. Like, there's no reason for anybody to really attack me or bully me. But just even scrolling on Facebook and places like that, you go on there and you see all these people being jerks and posting about politics and arguing and being jerks to each other. And it's made me, like, I deleted my Snapchat and my Instagram this year to try to just cleanse myself of that type of stuff. And, you know, I don't know that I'll get off of Twitter and Facebook or anything, but I've definitely thought about it, especially with Facebook. Facebook is extremely toxic. And hopefully if you're listening to this, you do realize that that is not your place to jump down a person's throats and offer your two cents, because you aren't a character. You aren't a wrestler. You're a fan. You know, we pay our $10 for the action figures. We pay our $50 for the tickets and our $20 for the shirts. And we have to realize that we're fans. You're not going to get mad on Rick Grimes on The Walking Dead because he didn't kill the zombie that killed your favorite character. Like, you have to suspend disbelief and know where the line is. And hopefully if you see other people acting like that, I know that people don't want to get involved, but especially if it's someone you know, call them out. Like, end that kind of stuff. Like, don't allow that kind of nonsense. So in other Japan wrestling news and a little bit happier news, it was announced that New Japan president Harold M, not even going to attempt the last name, but their president there was going to be stepping down from his role. He'll step down on the 23rd of October after 2.5 years in the company in that role. Some believe his departure could be good news for a potential AEW partnership. We could see maybe a talent exchange thing. You know, we've seen in the past where Jericho and Moxley kind of both wrestled in both places. We've seen it in Impact. Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows are doing their thing in New Japan and in Impact Wrestling. And as much as WWE is the king of the mountain, it is nice to see these other companies doing things. because that's how real sports are, and it gives it a real sports feel. It gives you the opportunity to watch these guys in Japan, maybe see them pop up like Thunder Rosa has been doing. She's an NWA talent, but she's been on AEW, and it just kind of interconnects the whole wrestling universe. You know, as fans, we're going to know the backstory, especially with the internet. We're going to find all the backstory, but it would be really cool. So hopefully the new partnership or potential new partnership could be good for fans and both companies alike. It might bring awareness, possibly send some American talent to Japan that they didn't know about, maybe even bring some of the Japanese talent over to the U.S. for certain events and really grow, because at the end of the day, that's how we get better. I've been a wrestling fan for my whole life, but when I watch some of these newer companies and I get to learn about the newest talent, that's actually exciting, because it takes you back to those original days when you first got into pro wrestling, even the big leagues, and you didn't know who people were, and you were like, oh, okay, yeah, that was the guy from last week. That's right. I think his move's the elbow drop. And it just kind of, just a really awesome kind of old school, takes me back to my childhood. So we'll see what happens. So as we saw on NXT's TakeOver event this past Sunday, they debuted their new setup. So they are out of Full Sail now, and they are wrestling at the Performance Center, and they've billed it as the Capital Wrestling Center, which is a tribute to the old school days when WWF was a territory still. That's what that region was called. And so it's a nice nod. It's an interesting setup. So you've got your ring, of course, and then you got your LEDs, kind of like you see in the Thunderdome. But then the bottom portion is divided into pods. So it's like plexiglass, and then it's like chain link fence. And then you got like these different kind of barricades. So it has like kind of a interesting feel to it. And from what I understand, the quote unquote real fans that are there are friends and family of the talent, as well as the same folks that they've been using. It's like the people who are training at the Performance Center, like the up and comers, the potential superstars of the future. But we did see a lot of people there taking the masks off. And I know that they're tested and things like that. And I know we see people on AEW taking, not even taking masks off. Most of the ringside talent isn't wearing masks. And it's different, though, not to defend them, but that's an outdoor environment and those people are tested. And I don't know, maybe it's not different. But especially when you're in an indoor environment, I would think that the risk is higher. So it would have been nice to maybe see WWE enforce that a little bit more and toss those people out of the building, just because it's not a game. You know, I know that they're trying to make their money and do their thing and keep their show going and the train keeps on rolling. But, you know, public health is no issue, especially in a state like Florida, which has consistently been one of the top hotbeds for the coronavirus here in the United States. But it was, as a fan's perspective, a very cool setup. It was really exciting to kind of see something new. Nice to see them not just do the very, very copy and paste exact same thing as Thunderdome. And they kind of borrowed it. And it also just allows for some new spots, because they're able to go ringside and like kind of slam each other around into the chain link fence and things like that as well. Plus it has that hockey thing, because the fans are able to slap on the side of the screen and everything like that. So we'll see. I imagine they're going to keep that going forward on their weekly programming as well. But interesting to see that. PW Torch is reporting that last Tuesday's Impact drew 168,000 viewers. 2 weeks ago was 168,000, and last week drew 200,000. So their average for the year right now is about 142,000. And I know that's low, and we'll talk about what AEW and the WWE are doing as well, because I know people are curious about that right now. But it's cool, you know. You figure 140 to 200,000 people. Imagine anything you do. If you're an artist of any capacity, maybe you're a musician, you get 200,000 people to do it and to watch it. That's pretty darn impressive. Obviously, it's going to be hard for them to compete against the likes of AEW and WWE, but it's another option. It's a good place for fans to watch and for workers to wrestle. And then when we look at the ratings from Raw, NXT, AEW, and SmackDown, according to a graphic that I found, and take this with a grain of salt because, you know, everybody's opinions on what's good and how you watch and when you watch, whether you're watching on streaming services or whether you're watching live, it all plays a factor. But so SmackDown apparently has stayed pretty even. They're averaging, I guess, 2 million viewers. And I'm not claiming to be an expert on this. This is just the information that I've been able to pull up. AEW during the last week of September was doing 835,000, and they're now doing 866 in the first week of October. During that same time span, NXT and Raw viewership is also both up. So wrestling as a whole, it sounds like it's getting more eyes on it, and maybe that's because people are bored at home, and who knows what the story is on that, but it is good to see wrestling growing in any sort of capacity. So the expectation is that next year's WrestleMania, which was scheduled to take place in Los Angeles, it was supposed to be there at the Rams' new football stadium, and it was going to be like one of the first big events. It's expected that it's now going to happen in Tampa. Apparently for the past month or so, it's been kind of marked unofficially by those in the know at WWE. And now I guess there is an expected legal battle to ensue as the people in Los Angeles kind of debate who actually has the ability to nullify that relationship and pull WrestleMania out of LA. I think the expectation is not to really do a redo for what happened in Tampa, but I'm thinking WWE might be maybe looking at the expectation that maybe coronavirus might still be around. Who knows? But it's going to be interesting kind of what happens there. Apparently, WWE is basically trying to book up any space in Tampa that they can, so they have options. So it'll be interesting. I would think that if Corona is still going, then they should just kind of proceed as normal instead of just going to a new space. Maybe just keep things rolling at the Thunderdome, because I think we've all kind of gotten used to it and accepted it. And the digital fans is a little better than nothing, but we'll see what happens. So, following last night's main event at TakeOver, which I will talk about in detail on my next podcast, which will come out in a couple of hours, it's reported that Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly suffered some legitimate injuries. And even this morning when I was looking, I couldn't really find any solid updates. Again, I don't know if these are kayfabe, if I'm being worked and I'm falling for it, because like the show's called, I'm a mark, so who knows. But apparently Kyle O'Reilly has a number of broken teeth, and O'Reilly was also being evaluated for additional injuries. But I think it was Triple H had said on Twitter, I think, that one of them, I believe Finn Balor, might be being looked at for a broken jaw. So that could be kind of interesting for his character if he's actually legitimately injured. I don't know if they'd have him drop the title like when he won the Universal title, or if it would be something a little bit different. But we should know probably by the end of today, within the next few days or so. And I'll add those in future podcasts if I do get some more updates on that. NWA Power turned 1 year old this month. So it's unfortunate that they can't do like a 1 year special, but yeah, they've been around for 1 year. NWA is not dead. They're definitely just doing things a little bit differently. They did have a kind of a collaboration event recently, so they're still around and they're still kicking, but it'll be nice when they are able to get back into their own studio and start kind of recording and doing things again. On the 3rd, a couple days ago, Ring of Honor star Amy Rose celebrated her birthday, so just last Saturday. So happy birthday to her. She's on Twitter. If you want to go on there, you can wish her a happy belated birthday just a couple days late. And that is kind of what we've got there. I'm going to save the remaining news and notes that I have for the next podcast. Because as I said, guys, there's too much action to throw in here. I'm surprised just in the past 48 hours. That was a concern of mine when I started this podcast, was if I was going to have enough content to talk about. I didn't want to just talk about the shows for the entire time. So there is a whole plethora of news and notes that I'm going to get into on the next podcast, but we've still got a half an hour to go here to talk about what Victory Road was. So I do apologize. As I said, am a newer fan of Impact Wrestling. Always kind of been on my radar, but the inability to watch in a very accessible manner was always a big challenge, because I didn't know Impact Plus. I knew it existed, but it was never really promoted very well, and I didn't know it was similar to WWE Network, and that's probably naive on my part. I shouldn't have known better, but I didn't know you could go on there and you can watch shows. I'm still kind of figuring it out, because here we are on Monday, October 5th, and I was trying to go on there and watch the last episode of Impact, which aired last Tuesday, so 6 days ago, and it's still saying it's not available in my region. So I'm going to have to check out the FAQ section there on their website and see exactly when it airs, because SmackDown and Raw is the same story. It doesn't air immediately on WWE Network. It airs many weeks and months later. And if that's the case with Impact, I don't know if that's going to be a good option. I don't know that I want to pay $8 just for the pay-per-views. I probably will, because they do the pay-per-views, and then they also do their weekly specials. But I can't get access through my television provider. A fan on Twitter had told me that if I go on Twitch, then I can watch the encores on Fridays. So apparently it airs on Tuesdays and it comes out on Fridays, but I don't know. Again, so my big thing is I need something, because of my schedule and me not always being able to watch things live, I need to be able to go and pause things. It took me a few days to finish watching Victory Road because of work and just personal commitments and other hobbies, and in between watching SmackDown and things like that. And so I usually will watch these shows on a delay just because of my schedule. And so I need an opportunity to watch Impact at my schedule. And I'm hoping that if Impact Plus is not the answer, then hopefully Twitch can be, since Twitch is free. But I know when they do the Twitch live stream, I can't pause it. I can't go back and watch it after the fact. Once it's done, it's done. So we'll see. There were a lot of ramifications at Victory Road that are going to, of course, build towards Bound for Glory. And then also some of it is going to be rematches and stuff for this Tuesday's edition. And we'll talk about that as we run through. So the opening match was a tag team match. We saw Wentz and his partner team up against the team of Triple XL. And those are some big old boys. If you have not seen those guys, those are some mammoth athletes. And I guess the one, Axel, or whatever his name is, was recently in Sports Illustrated because he lost 100 pounds, but he's still got a lot of poundage on him. But they put on an interesting match. I didn't really take too many notes on it. Both of those teams were pretty new to me. One thing that was kind of interesting that I noticed almost immediately is Madison Rayne's commentary style. So it's her and Josh Matthews. Josh Matthews leaves a little bit to be desired as well, but overall he does a very good job. He is a good commentator, and I feel like he carries her at different points, because she pauses and she doesn't seem like she knows what she wants to say. And as somebody who's doing these podcasts, you know, you have your idea how you want your commentary style to sound and how you want it to flow. And it doesn't always work out like that. It's sometimes there's a little snags and snafus, but she does a good job. She's not as bad as she could be, but she comes off as playing a character too much. And I get it. I know that she is 100% factually playing a character because that's what pro wrestling is. But if she's going to be the wrestler in that instance and she's going to be the color commentary person, well, Josh Matthews kind of handles more of the journalistic side and like the commentary, like the true journal side. I want her to speak kind of non-partisan, like non-bias. And it's weird, like the thing she says, she sounds like she's just trying to get herself over. And it's like, you're not even really an active in-ring talent at the moment. And I'm not a Madison Reigns hater. Like I don't have any bad blood with her or anything like that. It's just her style is something that I'm taking some time to get used to. And part of it could maybe be the fact that I'm an older wrestling fan. And for the longest time, we didn't have women. It wasn't until recently, women were always backstage reporters. There's always kind of like sexism involved in that. And recently, we've seen people like Beth Phoenix and Renee Young finally getting a chance, and now Madison Rayne over here. So her style is, I think, taking me some time to get used to. She might, I would say, as much as I like Renee Young, I would say that Madison Rayne is probably a little bit better. And I think it comes from, because Renee Young is definitely the better journalist. She's a legitimate journalist with a legitimate journalism degree and background, and she's worked for in real life sports in Canada and the U.S. But because Madison is a former wrestler or semi-retired wrestler, she brings a little more validity to it, and she does a good job. And she also, I think I'm gonna say she does the best job. She might even do a better job than Beth Phoenix, but she does she rubs me weird. And it just, I don't know what it is, but Josh kind of jumps in there and breaks up the awkward silences for the most part and kind of keeps it all flowing when she seems to stumble. So after the tag match, the first singles match of the night was Brian Myers, the former Curt Hawkins. He was taking on Tommy Dreamer, who he had been feuding with recently. And it was kind of what you'd expect, at least what I expected. A mid-card guy who's trying to prove to himself and to prove to fans that he is better than the treatment WWE gave him. And then an older talent, a guy like Tommy Dreamer, who once upon a time was my favorite wrestler. I got Tommy Dreamer action figures that I put over from time to time, and I enjoy him. But Tommy looked old in this match. He definitely was showing his age. So the match ultimately culminated with Myers beating Tommy Dreamer with like a running clothesline. After some rope breaks and things earlier in the match, Dreamer hit like a flying clothesline off the apron. That looked kind of awkward, but it was also kind of neat. And so yeah, it was a good match. There wasn't really anything more worth note in there, in my opinion. But I'm thinking Tommy Dreamer should probably try to find other ways to contribute because his time, I know he kills it. He's eating up on the indies and with appearances all the time, and I don't know if he just got too much mileage on his body, but he definitely looked old. But we'll kind of get into that later. There was a little more follow-up on that a little bit. So then the show cuts, and the unofficial, uncrowned TNA heavyweight champion Moose is shown backstage. He's knocking on a door and he's trying to get a hold of EC3. And then one of the authority figures from Impact comes up and lets him know that he needs to be focused and keep his eye on the ball, and that he's going to be facing Trey Miguel later in the night. He expresses that he's not prepared, and that he's focused on some other things, and he might not be in the right headspace because on Tuesday there is going to be a funeral hosted by EC3 for the TNA heavyweight title, and that's got Moose all up in arms and upset. And so, if you didn't know, you probably already know, the TNA title is not currently recognized as a active championship in TNA. So honestly, hopefully they do make it neat and interesting, and they have a little funeral with it, and then they just bury it. Because I'm not a big fan of these $1 million title, FTW title, these titles that aren't real. So if we can kind of kill that off, and maybe if AEW can do the same over there, take that title off a cage, because it doesn't get heat, it's not interesting, it doesn't add anything to the story. It's just like, oh, this guy should be champion, so I invented a championship for him, and it has no meaning, no history, and is never defended. It doesn't bring anything, it doesn't offer anything, it doesn't help the wrestler. So next after that, back in the ring, the X Division champion came out for a challenge that he's doing. It's called Defeat Rohit. It's the Defeat Rohit Challenge, and it's where he issues an open challenge to anybody in the back that wants to come out and wants to fight him for the X Division title. Originally, I didn't know what it was, but yeah, they're X Division title matches, which adds a layer and makes it interesting. So Rohit came out there, and he issued an open challenge, and Willie Mack promptly accepted. There was very little delay. Willie Mack came right out, and the title match got started. A little bit of back and forth, and then inevitably Rohit would get himself counted out. They made it seem like he could have gotten back in, but that he just kind of chose not to. So he lost the match, but defended, or excuse me, retained his championship. So technically, it was a victory for Willie Mack, but it allowed Rohit to retain the championship. And as we would find out later in the show, there's going to be another Defeat Rohit challenge on Impact on Tuesday. So that's something. They cut again backstage to Ken Shamrock, and he's being interviewed, and they ask him why he had attacked Eddie Edwards. And before he could answer, his tag team partner, Sami Callihan, answers for him, and he just says, "Hey, I'm looking out for my partner's best interests." He calls him his best friend, tells him that he's looking out for the best interests for him as an individual, best interests of his career, things like that. And it's implied by the announcer, but not confirmed by the talent, that he actually attacked Edwards due to Eddie Edwards' personal issues with Sami Callihan. And so they kind of left that open. And then up next, we had everybody's favorite photographer, Caleb with a K. He was in the ring, and he introduced his client, Tennille Dashwood. As of course, she was formerly Emma in WWE. And you know, for as much as she's been around in WWE and in Impact, I haven't seen much of her work. So she came out, and this was kind of really like one of my first times like actually sitting down, engaging and watching and focusing on her matches. So she fought Jordynne Grace, and it was a rubber match for these two girls. They had each beaten each other one time previously, so this was their third encounter, just to kind of wrap it up and finalize things in that rivalry. I was really impressed by how quick Jordynne Grace can move for her size. She's not the biggest woman, but she's also not petite. And I've only heard positive things about her. I do follow her on Twitter, and I was really impressed. She had a whole flurry of like corner attacks and taking moves off the ropes, and she was very quick and kept a good pace and didn't look winded or gassed. And I was really impressed. I really liked it. So I'm looking forward to watching more of her matches as my time goes on, and reviewing them and talking about them here, and kind of seeing my evolution as a fan towards her as an individual. So it was interesting, and this is probably me showing my age. So Caleb is Tennille's personal photographer. And so I think in my mind, I expected the guy to have a DSLR camera and kind of do like the traditional photography. But I guess in the millennial age, he's got his camera phone, he's got his iPhone or whatever phone he rocks, and he's doing all the photos with that. It is kind of neat because at different points you could see from the TV camera that he was legitimately using his phone camera and like showing clips and things. So it was interesting to kind of establish like, oh, what a annoying heel, what a bad guy. So that was kind of interesting. And it was funny because Madison Rayne kept teasing Josh Matthews throughout this segment about things he was saying. I guess he's recently turned 40, and so she was like, telling him, he's showing his age. And I really, even though I'm a bit younger than him, really was like, oh shit, I kind of feel like I'm the same guy right now. Like, he should have a camera. Why is he using his cell phone? But they do a good job with the heel things and stuff like that. At one point, Tenille Dashwood actually hit a super impressive butterfly suplex onto Jordynne Grace, who's a decent amount bigger than her, and it came off flawlessly. It looked amazing. So props to those two for carrying that through and making that look good. Grace later did catch Dashwood in a rear naked choke, which caused her to tap out, but it was unseen because at that point in the match, Caleb was actually distracting the ref. So things did continue. Dashwood would eventually later secure the victory, which I was disappointed, but because I haven't really been watching long enough, I don't know which direction they might possibly be taking the story. It was the rubber match, so they should probably move in a new direction. Long term, though, Jordynne Grace is obviously the better option between the two. She's the better worker, and this worked in terms of just establishing Dashwood as a heel who stole the victory. But hopefully they do continue to push Jordynne Grace in a good direction. So they went backstage. The Motor City Machine Guns did a little segment and basically set up for the match later on in the show, which was the four teams that are going to be facing for the tag titles at Bound for Glory would each pick one partner to face off in a fatal four-way. And that was going to be later in the show, little singles fatal four-way. So next, it cut to a different tag match, which was an unsanctioned tag team match between Heath and his tag partner Rhino, and they faced off against Reno Scum. A little sidebar that I kind of put down that I wanted to note is apparently Heath Slater has been talking to Joe Hennig, the son of Mr. Perfect, about joining Impact, and I guess right now, Hennig is basically saying, hey, maybe later. He's focusing on some other stuff. There's no word on if Impact is actually interested or if that's just Heath wanting his friend to come there. But I'd imagine they'd probably have a spot for him. They like bringing in new faces and stuff. So the match started, and it was interesting because Josh and Madison kept talking about how confusing the logic of the match was because it was unsanctioned. What did it help? Did it actually help Reno Scum if they beat him? Was it an asterisk for Heath and Rhino if they won? It didn't really make any sense. And I agree with that 100%. But it seemed weird that your commentary crew on your show would kind of point out your plot holes. And then they kind of just brushed over it. But obviously, him winning would be good momentum towards his efforts because hashtag hire Heath for Impact or whatever his little hashtag is his big pull that he's trying to do on Twitter right now. And so they did win. And as I put that in my notes, that was something I wanted to talk about here on the podcast, they did immediately head backstage. Scott D'Amore met them, and basically he unofficially did offer Heath a contract. So he said, hey, come to Impact on Tuesday. You don't got to sneak in the back door, and we'll talk about your contract status. And then I saw them kind of building for that and teasing about it on Twitter today, too. So I think they're going to make it official and give him a kayfabe contract because he's obviously already with the company. So the next match was Moose and Trey Miguel. It had been set up earlier in the evening. Basically, Josh Matthews planted it in our head that Moose may be a little too distracted and that he could be at a risk for a loss. That normally he was a 90% likely to beat Trey Miguel, but because he was distracted, maybe he would be at a little more of a risk. So the idea of him getting that upset about a fake belt, though, was kind of weird, but it is the story. He fought him, and throughout the match, he constantly called out EC3, not on a microphone. He just kept saying, where is he? Where is he? Talking to Trey Miguel as if he was EC3. And so that was kind of interesting. And at one point he was choking Miguel out, and it looked like, I was like, oh, he's gonna get DQ'd, because I thought like he's too focused on EC3, so he's gonna get himself disqualified. I was also a little confused. I think Trey Miguel has a tag team partner, right? So I didn't understand why he wasn't out there like supporting his buddy against a bigger, stronger adversary. And then Miguel did get some offense in. It was like a little comeback. And then we saw a strong Uranage from Moose, which did thwart the comeback attempts. Trey later recovered, and he comes back again for a second time. They spill to the outside, and he goes for like two or three suicide dives. Eventually, Moose catches him and regains the advantage. And then back in the ring, EC3's graphic is shown on the screen. That distracts Moose, and Trey is able to steal the victory. He gets a quick roll up for the 1-2-3. So Moose exits, and he starts yelling, "I know where he is. He's in the truck," because he's thinking he's showing that graphic from the production truck. So he goes back to the truck. He gets in the truck, and the graphic is on every single screen. It was really kind of weird because the truck was completely empty. I didn't understand why the truck was empty. There should have been staff in there. And then he goes to leave, and the truck is locked, and he can't get out. And then there's like a crazy shriek, and it hurts his ears. Then the door unlocks. He's able to leave. He walks up a path a little ways, and he sees his TNA title kind of at like a mural, and there's like candles around it, and he's like, "What's that?" And he goes over to approach it. EC3 does then attacks him, and then he says, "On Tuesday, the history of the TNA title will die." So sets up again for the funeral that we're told about on Tuesday, and then that's it for that segment. So next up was the Fatal 4-Way. It was the tag title preview. So it was Ace Austin, Josh Alexander, Carl Anderson, and then Alex Shelley. There was lots of outside chaos because each guy had his tag team partner there as they were setting up, you know, for the animosity in there. I really like how Ace Austin, I've seen him a few times in the past, does the thing with the card where the card's hidden and he gives you like a paper cut between your fingers, because it's actually very believable that a wrestler could, you know, hide a card. And I can see how that can actually be, you know, pretty devastating and painful. Maybe not enough to swing the victory, but to shift momentum. So I think that's good storytelling, and that's really good fun how they do that. So it's, and it's easy for him to like kind of use his body to block that from the ref seeing it. So it was also really good to see Carl Anderson be as good as he can be after being kind of held back by WWE. So I'm looking forward to seeing him and his partner, Luke Gallows, continue to shine, both in New Japan and in Impact as well. So later in the match, there was a ref bump, and that allowed all eight guys to get involved and start beating the crap out of each other. And the ref gets up. Apparently, the refs in TNA are a little bit stronger because he gets up pretty quick, faster than a referee in WWE. And he doesn't see anything happen, so there's no DQ. But he throws out all four of the non-legal participants, and the match continues. And then Josh Alexander later does pick up the win for his team, the North, and he pins Alex Shelley. So with 3 weeks to build, it's interesting because now he can say he has a pinfall victory over one half of the tag champs, and that makes them seem like a credible threat for the championships. We cut backstage to Tommy Dreamer, and he's congratulating Brian Myers, who he, of course, faced off earlier that evening. And he tells him, "Hey, it's a good match, man. What's happened between us is all squashed." And he, you know, he wants to shake his hand and let bygones be bygones, and, you know, tell him like, you know, "Thanks, kid." So Myers stands up and he says, "I'm not that same little kid that you used to know." He's like, "You think I'm gonna shake your hand? I'm not gonna shake your hand. I'm better now than you ever were." And he eventually says, "You are just a tired, sad old man." So actually, pretty good. I don't really buy into like why Brian Myers has this chip on his shoulder. I get that like he's never been utilized properly in a company, and if they would have said that, that would have been believable. But it's like he has a personal vendetta because I think he's faced Dreamer like three times now, and they're going to it looks like face off again on Tuesday. And he, before he left, Tommy Dreamer did tell him, Oh, you're going to see the innovator of violence on Tuesday. So maybe we'll see a little more intensity. Maybe it'll be a hardcore match or extreme rules match or something. So we'll see what happens there on Tuesday. I still do like Tommy Dreamer. I hope he has a better showing on Impact than he did tonight because he didn't really botch anything or mess anything up. I wasn't in love with it. So next up was the Knockouts Championship match. So you had Susie versus Deonna Purrazzo, and Susie came out with her little bestie, Kylie Rae. Kylie was set to face essentially whoever won that, so whoever the Knockouts champion was heading into Impact. That was going to be, or excuse me, not into Impact, but into Bound for Glory. So she came out with her, and then Deonna came out with Kimberly. And I will say, I think that the Impact title is the best women's title in wrestling right now in terms of the top three brands. I'd say that the Raw and SmackDown Women's Championships are probably the second best. And the AEW, I just don't love it. It's too small. I don't understand why it's so small. I get that like women are carrying it and that women are sometimes more petite, but it just seems significantly smaller and out of scale with the other AEW championships. And I'd like to see that change. And it just like seems like a smashed penny from like the railroad tracks. It's not the best looking title. So shout out to Impact for getting that right. So essentially, Susie, she's doing the thing. Sue Young is who she actually is, who's a great wrestler. Susie is like a female version of Eugene. She's just like the alter ego, kind of the Mr. Rogers Bray Wyatt to her Sue Young. So those two kind of fought. They did the Susie did her typical little schoolgirl stuff, and then at one point when the referee was distracted by Purrazzo, Kimberly was able to give a good boot to the side of the head of Susie, and then they teased a few times that Sue Young might be coming out. Eventually, Susie went to the top rope, executed a super bad looking crossbody. She did a cover. She kicked out. Kimberly gets on the apron. She's distracted. Smiling Kylie Rae rips her down. There's two failed armbar attempts, and then finally she locks in a double armbar, picks up the victory. It was a verbal submission, no tap out, but Susie did lose. Title was retained. That sets up for Bound for Glory. It will be Kylie Rae and Deonna Purrazzo in that encounter. And then afterwards, Purrazzo puts Susie's arm in a chair. She smashes it and then later puts her in an arm bar. And Madison Rae, Rain says it looks like Susie's arm was broken. So I'm thinking they may write her off of television and then she can return as Sue Young. That's what I'm hoping for. I think that would be ideal. And then they attacked Kylie Rae as well. So that was that. They did show a preview, look ahead at some of the Bound for Glory matches, as well as like Tommy Dreamer and his matches and some other encounters for Impact this Tuesday. Then you had your main event. You had Eric Young, Eddie Edwards going at it. Eric Young did suffer what seemed to be a legitimate injury to his eye, and he was bleeding for a while, but they did get it patched up. They didn't really play it into the match on commentary because I do believe that it was just a accidental cut. I don't think it was part of the story. Eddie Edwards hit a super ugly looking blue thunderbomb onto Eric Young. I believe it was just a botch. It looked really scary. He flipped him up. He was supposed to land on his back. He kind of got flipped over onto his stomach. Could have been super devastating in terms of legitimate injuries. Thankfully, it wasn't though. He did hit another one later in the match, which was a legitimate good-looking one. No botch there. Eric Young does go on to retain via submission there. After the match, he brings a chair into the ring and he tries to attack him, but Rich Swann, who he will be facing at Bound for Glory, ends up coming out and connects with the chair there. Or excuse me, misses the chair, beats Eric Young up, sends him reeling. So we saw three title matches on Victory Road. Every single champ retained, guys. So that sets up for them to build now for Bound for Glory in just about 20 days or so, 19 days, I think, as of today. So that'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to watching 3 weeks of Impact to further get invested in these stories and these characters. But we came right up against the wire, almost here, a little few seconds to go as we hit the hour mark. But we got all the news and notes in. We got all the recap. And I'm going to go and do it all again for NXT 31. So if you enjoy this podcast, I invite you to listen to the next one. But until that next one, thank you for listening. I'm tapping out.